It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXD-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Rattle to Brock Holt. It should do it from right field, and the Red Sox win it. And they win it handily today. 9-2 the final score. Now, coming home after a 6-4 trip.
That's how it ended today in Minnesota. Red Sox beat the Twins. 9-2 was the final score. They avoid a sweep in Minnesota. They go 6-4 in a 10-game road trip. They'll be back in Boston tomorrow. In the interim, 617-779-0985. We'll open up the phone lines right away. There's a couple of games to catch up on. Obviously, the Red Sox played last night behind David Price. They lose 4-1. They then go back out there against the Twins today behind Rick Porcello, facing a sweep. They come back and win 9-2. And look, there's a lot of ground to cover there in two games. But the bottom line is this. For me, personally, anyway, I'm a little surprised that people are reacting as desperately to the Red Sox offensive problems as they have been. Now, again, they scored 9 runs today, so all of a sudden maybe people will just stop being hysterical, stop overreacting, and look at the Red Sox for what they are, which is a very good team in an American League this year that frankly feels like an aristocracy. Maybe the word oligarchy, is that a better word? The rule of just a few. There are a few dominant teams in the league, and that's it. Or a few wealthy teams in the league, and by that I mean wealthy with talent. Houston, New York, Boston, and then who? It's really that group. So I look at the Red Sox and I say, overall, offensively, they're second in the league in runs scored. The only team that scored more runs than the Red Sox right now is the Houston Astros, and they are stacked. The Astros are loaded. So I want to play for you a phone call we received at the end of the afternoon show, the Felger and Maz show. Because I think it was Frank, Jimmy, is that his name? Frank in New Jersey, who called and who calls from time to time. And he's a Red Sox fan. And started talking about the Red Sox needs here going forward as they approach the July 31st trading deadline. Because entering today, do you realize the Red Sox were batting like .215 over a span of 12 games? So that's a couple of weeks where they're hitting in the low 200s. And despite that, and again, this is going into today, despite that, they had gone 6-6 over that 12-game span. Usually you hit .215 over 12 games, you're going to lose 8 of them. And a year ago, I think the Red Sox might have lost 8. So maybe this is all sort of some kind of commentary on the Red Sox consistent starting pitching now. Because, boy, they do. They get a good start pretty much every night. Even Price last night, who wasn't great, 6 innings, 3 runs. If that constitutes a bad start, well, then you're doing okay, at least in the pitching department. It's not a great start. It's a mediocre one, but it's not bad. 3 runs with this lineup, that should keep them in the game. That should be enough to win. But suddenly, people are focused on the offense, which I really don't get. People like Frank in New Jersey. Here's what he said.
For the Red Sox, if you don't watch them every night, their 50-26 record, I think, is a total cover for the deficiencies that they have. If you do watch them every game, you realize the deficiencies. You realize, as we've been saying for a while, that they're not as good as New York and Houston. That's clear. But they have multiple deficiencies. For a team of that record now, they have too many things that they need, and they don't have enough to get it.
So, to me, that was well put. They have too many things that they need, and they don't have enough to get it. So the Red Sox are going to have to choose. So if you as a fan are looking at this team right now and saying, well, they need a bat at the bottom of the lineup, they need a relief pitcher, and they could probably use another starter, which they really don't need, but I just threw that on the list for dramatic effect, okay? But if you're one of these people that sees all these multiple needs, and they do have multiple needs, and you want to fill them all, I'd be surprised if the Red Sox can fill one of them effectively, let alone two. Okay? One, let alone two. To me, it's still bullpen. So you're just going to have to hope that come playoff time, Dustin Pedroia's back, or Eduardo Nunez is swinging the bat like he did last year, or Christian Vasquez finds it, or, dare I say, Jackie Bradley actually starts getting some hits. And on that last one, I wouldn't hold your breath. Bradley on this trip, 4-for-35. You know when you stink offensively? Now you can tell. When you go 4-for-35 on a road trip and your batting average only drops 12 points because you stink so bad that it can't go down any lower than it already is. Jackie Bradley went 4-for-35 and he went from 193 to 181. And despite that, despite Bradley, despite Vasquez, despite Nunez and Leon, and whoever else is at the bottom of that lineup, I'd still go bullpen first. I would. I would go bullpen first. 617-779-0985. I want to get to the Yankees, Giancarlo Stanton last night, the Yankees today. I want to get to the Red Sox continued problem on the bases with another mishap in that game last night. Obviously, we'll take your calls on David Price, anything else, whatever you want to do here. Up until 7 o'clock, we'll kick it off tonight with Jay. Oh, we lost him there for a second. We'll try that again. Jay, who's in Manchester. Jay, what do you got?
Hey, I just wanted to call. And I was there on April 28th when Jackie Bradley Jr. fell on his face on a routine line drive straight to him, causing an in-the-field two-run homer. And I say at this point, we should trade that guy for a bag of dented baseballs.
So, Jay, that aside, okay, because to me, if you want to move Bradley, you can. And I understand people's frustrations with him. Believe me, I was done with him a long time ago. But at this stage, I don't know how much you're really going to get for Bradley. You'll get a little bit. I mean, there's some value there. He's a terrific outfielder, although he's not quite as good as everyone thinks he is. And when you really get to it, when you really sort of weigh it out, those great plays that he makes, how often do they really happen? Well, what are we talking about? Once every two weeks? Once a month? He made a great play the other night where he threw a guy out at the plate. They were already up, they were already down at the time 6-2. Prior to that, the last really great eye-popping play that he made was on Memorial Day. So that's 3 or 4 weeks ago. So over the course of a year, how many of those plays does he make that the average center fielder can't? Five? Six? Now, I know you're going to say I'm low, but I looked this up on Fangraphs the other day. That's the modern baseball metrics of measuring defense. You know where they had Jackie Bradley ranked among American League center or Major League center fielders, not just American League? 11th out of 21. 11th out of 21. Is that really worth carrying a 181 average? Because I don't think it is. I told you, a long time ago, I'd have gone with Benintendi in center, J.D. Martinez in left, and I'd have DH'd Hanley. Now Hanley's gone. So I'd go with Swihart in left, or Brock Holt in left, whatever. Bradley, you want to put him in for defense? Do it. In the lineup right now, and really for the entire year, he's been an automatic out. Shane's in a car. Go ahead, Shane.
Hey, Maz. Your thoughts on... I know a couple days ago, it was yesterday or whatnot, you, and even today, you said that we have an eighth inning problem.
Yes.
And we need a closer as well.
You mean long term. Go ahead. Yep.
Yep. What's your thought on Steve Cishek from the Cubs? Theo is knows the Red Sox. I was wondering your thoughts.
Okay, so look, I haven't looked at Cshek's numbers recently, but to me, historically, he is a middle reliever slash setup man. I don't know if Cshek is really what I would qualify as a long-term answer in the closer position. And just to clarify for the listeners, yesterday I said if the Red Sox wanted to go out and trade for a setup man who had term on his contract, and the player we were talking about was Raisel Iglesias or Raisel, I don't know how to pronounce his first name, Raisel or Raisel Iglesias with the Cincinnati Reds. I think he has two more years left. He's closing in Cincinnati. And if you wanted to give up a little bit more to get a guy like him, and the salary is manageable, so you'd be able to fit him in under that threshold, a guy like that, and then at the end of the season, you let Kimbrel go, and you have a guy ready to step into that role to become the next closer, I wouldn't mind that kind of deal. I mean, I'd be okay. That in fact, that to me would be like hitting a home run. That kid in Cincinnati, Iglesias, he's pretty good. Let's jump ahead to Joe here, who's in a car, has an issue with some of my arguments. Go ahead, Joe. Joe, you there?
Oh, sorry. Hey, Maz, just a quick one. It seems like, and again, you might disagree, others might disagree, but it seems like you use statistics to your arguments when you want to, and you don't when you don't want to.
So, like, what?
Like you go
what's,
either way.
What
like the other day you were talking about a pitcher, and you were talking about you looked at him, and he had pretty good stats, but you didn't like his stuff. Or you talk about a batter, he's got pretty good numbers, but he can't hit the ball to, you know, to with power to the opposite field. And then today you're talking about the Red Sox, well, statistically, they score a lot of runs. Yeah, but they score a lot of runs in one game, and the other games they get shut out. So, yeah, statistically, they score a lot of runs. That's basically it. I just find you sometimes to be, I think you're great overall.
Joe, you don't have to think I'm great. That's okay. I would tell you that everybody's inconsistent with stats. We all use stats when they serve our argument. And then we ignore them when they don't, because we have certain likes and certain dislikes when it comes to players. So guilty. I'm guilty. No two ways about it. Guilty as charged. Absolutely true. So I would tell you that some guys I look at, and I don't know how they produce the numbers they do. Other guys I look at and say, that guy has good stuff. Why can't he win? And usually the answer is between the ears or in the chest. It's one of those two when you're talking about issues of the like. But as it pertains to the Red Sox, to me, again, still this year, I would focus on that bullpen. I would. So again, and maybe this is what the caller's talking about. Statistically, that looks like a good bullpen. It does. But every time I watch Joe Kelly or Matt Barnes, or in the case of the other night, Robbie Scott pitch in the eighth inning on the road. Did I mention Matt Barnes? Carson Smith when he was here. Like, pick whoever you want. And Tyler Thornburg hasn't even gotten on the mound yet. But anytime I see any of those guys pitch in a big spot on the road, and when I say big spot, in New York, in Houston, hell, even in Seattle, it feels like they fail. And I just think the Red Sox need something a little bit more ironclad there, given the competition in the league this year. Which brings us to the Yankees last night and today, and a statistic that I read this morning that really made my eyes pop out of my head. We'll get to that next.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Swung on and driven to deep left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a game-winning bottom of the ninth. Two out. Walk-off home run by Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo. Non si può stoparlo. He hits a two-run blast. A Stantonian home run. And the Yankees have come all the way back. 5-0 down for a 7-5 victory in one of the great games of the year.
All right, so that was last night in New York. Yankees are down 5-0 to the Mariners. They come back and rally. It ends with a Stanton walk-off, his 18th home run of the year. And I'm not here to rub Giancarlo Stanton in your face. I'm not. As much as I would like to. I am not here to rub him in your face. Stanton and the Yankees won today. He was robbed of another home run today, but they won the game 4-3. The Yankees now, I think, I saw this today, I think the Yankees are 42-13 in their last, what is that, 55 games. Okay, 42-13. I mean, that really, that's nuts that they are putting up those kinds of numbers over that stretch. And to give you an idea, this stat blew my mind this morning when I saw it. With the Red Sox lost last night, and the Red Sox are on pace for 107 wins. Okay, with the Red Sox lost last night, they fell behind the Yankees by two games, not in the loss column, two games period, for the first time this year. In other words, the Yankees' lead over Boston is growing. And on April 20th, which is just 2 months ago, I mean, today's June 21st, 2 months ago, the Red Sox had a 7.5 game lead over the Yankees. The Red Sox had started the year, if you remember, 17-2. The Yankees were 9-9 at that point, I think it was. 7.5, the Red Sox were up. They're now behind by two, and they're behind by four in the loss column. And they've played well. The Red Sox haven't played badly. They haven't played bad baseball. Overall, they've played well. And they've lost 9.5 games to the Yankees in 2 months. This is what it's going to be like in the American League this year. You don't have room to slip up. And let me say that this is why today's win over the Twins was not just your typical June 20th win to avoid a sweep.
I mean, I looked at this today before the first pitch, Mass, as a must win against this terrible Twins team.
So, Murray, think of it. If the Red Sox had lost today, they'd be three back and five in the loss column.
And how about this, too? So, you
to know, a team that's, like, you know, rolling right now. They're playing, like, 800 ball, pretty much.
Obviously, you can't always trust analytics, but if you look at, like, Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, you know, so they break it down in terms of strength of schedule. And right now, the Yankees' remaining strength of schedule is 482. Whereas the Red Sox is 504, and they still have 10 games against Houston, Washington, and Cleveland.
Murray, the Yankees have played, I think, the hardest schedule in the league to this point, or something like it. You know, they're 14-5 against the other playoff teams, Cleveland, Boston, Houston, and Seattle. They just swept the Mariners. 14-5 against those teams. And look, again, you know how I feel about the Yankees? I picked them to win the division. The Red Sox can beat them. They can. They can beat them. So don't take my word for it. I'm just telling you, I look at the Yankees' talent and I think they're deeper.
Yeah, but they need to clean up on the crap like the Twins when they're facing them.
But the idea that if they lost today, they'd be back 3-5 in the loss column, if that doesn't tell you how important every game is in the American League this year and in the American League East, I don't know what does. Really, you just can't afford to slip up for too long. Now, look, I doubt the Yankees are going to play 800 ball all year. And the Red Sox still have 13 games with them head-to-head, starting with the series in a couple of weeks in New York. But you don't want to go into any sort of slide or funk here in the middle of, you know, June or even in the middle of July. Because if you look up and at some point you find yourself 7 or 8 back, I don't think you're going to catch them. And I would say the same of them, by the way, the other way. Paulie's in a truck. Go ahead, Paulie.
Hey, Tony. How you doing, pal?
Good.
It's always nice to hear you talk baseball. I want to come to the radio and hear you talk about Brady and Garoppolo. I tell you, I'm all ears when you start talking baseball. Thing.
I appreciate that.
I've been saying since the winter that this team's going to hit as long as they're healthy. You know, that's what worries me. A guy like Pedroia, we don't know, you know, whether or not he's going to be in the lineup. That's one of the missing pieces. They were expecting him to be healthy, and I've said. Also, that since the winter, that I believe they need bullpen help. That's what I really think that what they need is more arms. Give me all your pitches. You know, I really and a manager that knows how to use them.
Okay, so Paul, I'm going to let you go just because we're just stepping all over each other here. But to me, you know, there's lots of ways to look at the bullpen. Okay, one of which is, and we always forget this, but you shouldn't. By the time the playoffs roll around, one of your starters is going to be in the bullpen. Your worst starter is going to be in the bullpen. So that could be. Now, if it's Stephen Wright, I don't know that that does you any good. Stephen Wright's only real value to me is as a starting pitcher. I suppose you could bring him out of the bullpen as a long man if someone gets knocked out of a game early, and then you take your chances. Maybe the knuckleball's on that day and you get him rolling. But to me, that doesn't maximize his value out of the bullpen. If it's someone like Price, which again, I doubt, because if he pitches well, you want him in the rotation. But if you were ever to get such consistent performance out of your rotation that you said, well, we'll stick Price in the pen. Well, then I feel better about your bullpen. Price last October was lights out. He was dynamite out of the bullpen. And I don't know if you're holding your breath on Drew Pomeranz. I'm not. But if Pomeranz can come out of the bullpen and give him a little pick-me-up late in the year or whenever he gets healthy, he can get back in there and you feel differently about him as a result, fine. Okay, maybe you get a little bit of help there. I still look at it, though, and feel like that doesn't give them a legit eighth inning guy. A legit eighth inning guy. Now, Addison Reed, pretty good. I'd prefer someone like Kelvin Herrera. Like, I want major firepower at the end of that game. If you're telling me you can go Kelly or Barnes in the seventh, and then someone like Herrera in the eighth, and then Kimbrel in the ninth, now we're talking. And in a worst-case scenario, maybe you get 7-8 outs from just the last two guys, I'm in. But those are the kind of horses you're going to need in October if you're going to win. Unless you have a lineup like the Astros and you can just bomb away and beat everybody, which I don't think the Red Sox do. Not many teams do. Liam is in Reading. Go ahead, Liam.
Hey, how's it going, guys? A couple quick questions here. So last week on Telegram Mass, you guys brought up Rosny Castillo, who I totally forgot about. The first question I have is, what is preventing them from just kicking the tires on him because Jackie Bradley completely sucked? The second question is, this is for you baseball experts. Can anyone actually confirm that Tyler Thornburg is a real-life human being? Because I'm pretty sure that he's a legend as the best baseball player to never exist.
Okay, I'm sorry, Liam. Again, I didn't mean to step all over you. Yeah, look, the Thornburg thing, Murray touched on this yesterday, ebbs and flows. It's like every time he starts to make progress, he regresses or he has some sort of setback and he goes back down to the minor leagues. It's the longest rehab assignment in Major League history for Tyler Thornburg. So, but that brings me back to the original point. What's he going to be like when he comes back? So given what he's doing in the minor leagues and his ERAs in the fives, all of a sudden he's going to come to the big leagues and be a dominant eighth inning guy after thoracic outlet surgery? It just doesn't feel viable. Feasible for 2018. So don't hold your breath on Thornburg. Again, throw him in the mix of guys with Barnes, even if he pitches well. Barnes and Kelly and all those other guys for the seventh inning. Pomeranz, seventh inning. They need an eighth inning guy. And they don't have all of the assets to be able to make multiple deals, I don't think. So, now, with regard to your first question, which was Rosny Castillo. The problem with Castillo is that when they took him off the 40-man roster a couple of years ago, one of the real benefits is that his salary no longer counts in their payroll and no longer counts toward the luxury tax. So if they were to bring him up, all of a sudden his $10 million average, 10.4 I think it is, counts against the luxury tax. That would put them over the 237 number that they don't want to go over. So that's the real reason why Castillo is not here. Now, if you wanted to tell me money is a lousy reason, I agree with you. I hate it. But I wrote off Rosny Castillo a long time ago because he has been, he was so bad at the beginning. And then they took him off the 40 that I don't think there's any way now they bring him back and have his salary count towards the luxury tax. I just don't think they're going to do it. Could he play better than Jackie Bradley? I would hope so. I mean, at this stage, who's playing worse than Bradley? He's one of the worst offensive players in baseball. We looked it up yesterday. He's in the bottom five in the majors in OPS among regular players. The only guy in the American League that really has been worse is Chris Davis of the Orioles, who's a stiff. So Bradley is easily, you could easily upgrade there with just something mediocre offensively in center field. But I'd be surprised if it's Castillo. The Red Sox have other problems, too, as we all know. One of them reared its ugly head last night in the loss to the Twins.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show the Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What is he doing? Been some of the worst base running I have ever seen. What was he thinking?
It's time for the Baseball Reporter's base running blunders.
Bradley takes off again. It's way outside. Here's the throwback to third. Brock Holt caught in a rundown. Garber running, throwing back in the tag, and he is out at third base. We'll see if the Red Sox challenge that at all. They were thinking about it. Jackie Bradley was calling hold safe from his position, but Red Sox have not determined if they're going to challenge it yet.
Well, they do throw through on this. No, they don't throw through, excuse me, and they got Holt about halfway down that line, so they were planning on that throw going through, and it never happen.
No challenge. He's out at third. Inning over.
Did you guys catch that one last night? And again, I'm going back to last night's game now. Red Sox lose a 4-1 game to the Minnesota Twins last night. They can't generate any offense, and they scored one run in the game, which was on a gift. It was on a play that got completely botched at first base. Remember that? A little flip by the first baseman, Logan Morrison, to the a pitcher covering. Was that the night before? In any case, whatever. They had a first and third situation last night with two outs. Catcher received the ball, kind of stood up and took a step, maybe two steps, towards the left-handed batter's box, but never gave any indication that he was going to throw down to second. And Brock Holt breaks halfway to home from third base to the point where the catcher's like, you got to be kidding me, shooting fish in a barrel. And they get Holt to third. Yet another mistake on the bases.
I think they're on pace for 70, and they had 81 last year.
So what are you saying, they're getting better?
No, they're stupid.
Oh my gosh, Jimmy, it's unbelievable.
No, it does feel like it's just last year all over again.
I mean, it really
this
is.
This might be one of the dumbest baseball teams I've seen in a long time.
And I'll tell you, that one last night was as bad as you'll see. I don't know what the hell Brock Holt was thinking, and at least he had said as much after the game. Like, just a horrible mistake. But they've been struggling to score runs. They get first and third. The catcher doesn't even fake the throw to second on a you know, I call it a quote-unquote double steal. As if it were like a Little League play. If it were a Little League play and the shortstop ran across and the runner got picked, you'd get it because the runner on third is 11 years old and he doesn't have a clue. But a major leaguer to just break halfway home with the catcher not doing anything? Oh my gosh, what a mistake. There are times where, and again, we had a caller say this earlier, they're on pace for 107 wins. And there were times you look at them and say, how are they doing this? Now, they're a good team and their starting pitching has been great. Of late in particular, really good. Feels like they get a good start every night now. And they're on pace for 107 wins, and yet you look at them and say, the bottom of the lineup has holes, there's a hole in the eighth inning, and they run the bases like they've never played the game before. Sometimes. They're a good team. And incredibly, 107 wins right now is not good enough to win the division either. There's that element too. Back to your calls, and I'm sorry, I punched up the wrong one. Let's go to John in New Bedford. John, what do you got?
Hey, Maz, I just want to say I love the show. I don't follow baseball, watching it visually as much as I'd like to, but you guys, you and Jim do a fantastic job, so thank you.
Well, appreciate that.
That being said, every deficiency that the Red Sox have, and I'm with you as far as like the money goes, because it makes me sick that money has anything to do with it when it comes to the Boston Red Sox. But every pigeonhole that we're in seems to be a Dave Dombrowski issue. And that to me bothers me because he went out and spent so much money, but yet now money is going to be the root of the Red Sox disaster, in my opinion, because they're not going to be able to, A, have the farm system to get anything, and B, take on any salary. So I just wanted your opinion on that. That's what I see. I mean, obviously, you're a professional, but I just don't understand how ownership and Dombrowski are on such different pages.
Well, so, John, listen, that second point that you made to me is one that's probably not amplified enough. It's one thing for a guy like Dombrowski to come in and say, trade your prospects. Go out and get established players. You know, established players win. And he's not the only guy that's ever thought that. Dan Duquette used to think it. Dan Duquette used to trade prospects. So, fine, no problem. I get it. That's what your philosophy is. Of course, you have to replenish the system. That's one problem. But the second part of it is, if you're going to spend money and build a good team, you should be able to spend money and build one that's airtight. Like, the money part of it really does come more to ownership and their commitment than it does to the president of baseball operations. I can identify all the most expensive players in the game, too, and then go out and pay them. We can all do that. But your point is, and it's a great one, Dombrowski has built this team with all these contracts and all this money, and now they don't, even if they had the prospects, they might not be able to take on a contract. So he is spent to the point where he's limited their flexibility. Like, that's really amazing when you think about it. And he told Sean McAdam of the Boston Sports Journal that he believes they have the prospects to make a deal. Fine. Let's say that he does. I disagree with him. I think he's going to get a lesser player than he would be able to get in another season. But whatever. He can't take on anyone with money, though. So again, he's limiting the talent pool that he can draw from. Ideally, when you're a team that has money and prospects, you should be able to add any player you want. If there's a good player available on the market, you should be able to go get him because you have the capacity to add both. As a big market team, that is one of the great advantages. Whenever a good player becomes available, you're in on him. Kelvin Herrera, Royals to the Nationals, you're in on him. It didn't really feel like the Red Sox ever really had a chance there. At least it didn't feel that way to me. Kyle's in a car. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, Tony. I was just kind of wondering on your opinion on once we traded Hanley, I know it was a money thing, and I understand it, but if there was ever a plan for filling that void, or if Mitch Moreland is that plan, because I just don't see people being afraid of Mitch Moreland coming up in the cleanup spot. And I remember listening to you earlier in the season when, you know, they signed him, and it was kind of wondering, why are we signing Moreland, and you thought he was going to come off the bench. So I'll just hang up and listen to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so Kyle, look, to me, that's what it comes down to, is when a guy steps in the box, do you look at him as an opposing pitcher? Throw the numbers out from that year, because lots of guys have good years. Okay, but when a guy steps in the box, do you look at him and say, boy, I better be careful here? So, for example, Giancarlo Stanton, even at 255, and he's hitting now, but if he finishes the year at 265, and he comes up in a big spot in the postseason, do you have a little bit of fear there? Because I would. To me, if I'm a pitcher on the mound, I'm looking at this guy saying, well, if I execute right, I can get him out. So J.D. Martinez is a better hitter than Stanton. But you look at Stanton and say, you can't make a mistake. If you make a mistake, he hits it out of the ballpark. I mean, he's got that kind of unique power. And I always felt that way about Hanley. Like, say what you want about Hanley, but when Hanley wants to hit, he hits. 380 career in the postseason, 571 last year in the playoffs. He's not here anymore. Mitch Moreland steps up. I'm not afraid. I can be aggressive. I can attack. And I don't have any concerns because I don't think he's really going to hurt me. He might, but I don't feel that way on the mound. And again, I sort of think there's a confidence element that comes into play when certain guys step into the box. And if you're a pitcher, and Stanton or Judge steps in there, you're a little bit more cautious, and you don't have quite the confidence as you would when Mitch Moreland steps in. Just my two cents. Brian's in his car. What do you got, Brian?
Hey, what's up, Tony? So I watched the game last night, and I just can't get the image out of my head of Devers dropping yet another absolute cupcake at third base. I believe that's his 15th error at this point on the season, so he's on pace for quite a lot. I know he's not producing the way we've seen him able to with the bat. He's still young, 21. Are we at all, do we have a better idea of what we have in Devers yet? Are we concerned at all with his play at third base defensively? And do we think he hasn't even scratched his potential at the plate yet?
So, look, Brian, I think Devers can hit. And to me, last year, watch the power's real. I mean, I think we all know he can hit 30 home runs in the big leagues. Hell, he could do it this year for all we knew if he gets hot. To me, the thing that impressed me last year was the way he hit the ball to the opposite field. He hit for some average there. It's not perfect. I'm not saying he's a 325 hitter in the big leagues, but he should be able to hit 280, 275, 270, whatever. Somewhere in that range in the big leagues, he should be able to do that. The defense you knew was a problem. You knew it was. And maybe the fact that the Red Sox drafted a kid now who projects as a third baseman tells you something about what their long-term vision is for Devers. They don't see him as being a third baseman long-term. Maybe he's a DH, maybe he's a first baseman. Who knows? But to me, with Devers, it's all about the bat. If he hits, you put up with everything else. You do. Just part of the deal. And you'll find a spot for him. But at the moment, the defense hurts. Fortunately, overall, I would say Bogaerts has had a good year defensively. So the left side of the infield could have been a disaster, and it hasn't been. So I give a lot of the credit for that for Bogaerts. The defense on the right side has been worse than I thought it would be. But again, Pedroia's been out, and that's been a, you know, Nunez over there is a disaster. Kyle's in a car. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, Maz. I don't want to say that the Red Sox are relying on this, but
How realistic do you think it is that they're optimistic that Durbin Feltman, the draft pick out of TCU, may be ready for a September call-up and a playoff spot similar to like Brandon Finnegan in 2014?
Okay, so this is a good question. And Kyle, look, I forget the guy's name too. He was their third round pick. Who was it again?
Durbin Feltman.
Durbin Feltman, and I've read a bit about him as everyone has. And for those who don't know, this is a player who in college has pitched out of the bullpen, and he is projected as someone that could actually help them in the second half of this year. Okay? And I read an analysis the other day, like maybe the, and I don't remember who wrote it, so forgive me for that. But the analysis was that Feltman could come up and pitch in the big league level in the second half of the year, much in the way that Craig Hansen did for the Red Sox in, I don't remember if it was 05 or 06. It must have been 05. Right, because in 06 they didn't make the playoffs. And here's what I would say. How did Craig Hansen turn out? It didn't work. So, again, it's possible. I'm not telling you it's impossible that a guy could come out of college, come into the big leagues, contribute right away. Of course it can happen. Absolutely. But history suggests it's a bit of a long shot. So, all I'm telling you is if you're the Red Sox, you cannot bank on this. You cannot bank on it. If it happens, great. You've got another weapon there. Just like the Angels had with Francisco Rodriguez in 2002 when he came up from A-ball, and the Yankees with Mariano Rivera in 1996 when he was a setup man and pitched a couple of innings behind Wetland. Absolutely great. Great. But you can't plan that way. You absolutely cannot, and Dombrowski knows it.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5. Sports Hub.